Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
The Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Toronto Maple Leafs got a couple days off here to regroup, look in the mirror, think about what you've done. Let's bring in our insider, brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus. You can inspect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. It's Jeff Merrick, host of The Jeff Merrick Show and co-host of 32 Thoughts, the podcast. How's it going this morning, Jeff?
Get in your room, put your head down, think about what you've done.
That's how it feels.
Hey, Alicia, I was thinking about you last night. My kid was skating at the barn, just a little bit north of Stouffville, and I saw a forefar on the wall.
What?
There was a forefar who played for the Stouffville Spirit.
Probably my brother, Jordan. Yes. He was the captain at one point.
I know. Let's
go, Jordy.
Pictures of, you know, hockey players all up in, you've been to the barn before, Loft.
Yeah.
Up at, like, Kennedy Road near Vivian. And
I know it well.
It was nice. I walked in. I'm sure you skated there plenty of times. I was glad to see a forefar on the wall.
Love that.
Yeah, anyway, there's my forefar story from last night. Justin, I thought about you talking to Chris at our show in Hamilton a couple of weeks ago for 32 Thoughts. So there we go. I got you guys.
I appreciate you throwing me in there.
All right. So Elliot on the show yesterday had a little bit of a tipping of the hand, possibly, of what's going on for the Toronto Maple Leafs. We're just going to play that clip for anyone that hasn't heard it, and then we'll talk about it.
Jeff, global warming definitely exists in Toronto. It is warmer now than it should be at this time of year for a lot of reasons. You know, the comments that Sheldon Keith has had after two losses so far have really stood out. You know, after game one, he went hard at them. And after last night, he went hard at them. And the thing that stood out to me was he basically said that they should have killed Arizona. The boldness of that quote really stood out to me. It wasn't just that our best players aren't there yet. It's basically that we should light up the Coyotes, which any fan would say, a lot of media members would say, but it's very rare that a coach comes right out and says, we had no business losing this game to this team.
First of all, it always sounds like Elliot's like in the middle of like a traffic stop whenever he's on the show. He's a busy guy.
He was in New York for the Board of Governors yesterday.
You can completely tell. I heard the yellow taxis.
Times Square, I know, right? Like, thanks for being a pro. Thanks for trying to find somewhere quiet.
Nah,
just going to wander around and blather on to Merrick here. Normally situations like this, like it can either be a controlled fire or it can be a 10 alarm blaze, right? It's all about what the coach chooses to make it. And so far twice, Sheldon Keefe has said, yeah, you know what? In case of emergency, smash glass, let's do that. You know, after the first game against the Montreal Canadiens, it was all about we weren't prepared. And then after the embarrassing loss against the Arizona Coyotes, it was all about they don't have elite players, we do. But our elite players didn't play like elite players. So you've already went to the, we weren't prepared well. Now you've gone to the call out your top guys well. And we're not even a week into the season here yet.
No.
Like, Justin and Ailish, like, I think we're all wondering, okay, where do you go from here? And you've got a really good Dallas Stars team coming to town. Dallas arrives later on this afternoon for a game tomorrow. Dallas is excellent. I don't know if you guys have watched the Dallas Stars play so far this season. They are mowing into teams like a hog into truffles. They look really, really good. So it's not getting any easier here for the Maple Leafs. But the one thing that this version of the Maple Leafs, one thing that we know about them is, they don't get up for teams that are inferior to them. Like, how many times have they been, you know, dusted by the Sabres, dusted by the Senators? So far this season, it's been Montreal and Arizona. You know, you barely squeak out a win against Washington, barely squeaking out against the Ottawa Senators. This is a team that does get up for the elite competition around the NHL. We'll see if that trend continues tomorrow against Dallas. But yeah, I think it was interesting comments by Sheldon Keefe. And if the temperature's hot in Toronto, I think a lot of it is because, you know, you call out your top guys and you say your team is not prepared, temperature's going to get a little bit hotter.
I think that's important context, that they have a history of not getting up for inferior opponents. I think the context of the of last season and their early season woes is important context as well. But I can't help but feel like Sheldon Keefe is letting on that the reality is much more consequential or potentially consequential than we realize. Like, it feels like he's a bit uncomfortable right now.
I don't think it would surprise anybody. You know, what have we been talking about kick off the season? We've been talking about the hot seat in Vancouver. And again, last night, the Vancouver Canucks squander another 2-goal lead. And they end up losing. I know, right, Ailish? They end up losing it over. That's so bad. They end up losing it overtime, you know, to the Columbus Blue Jackets. And we know it's been hot in New Jersey. You know, over the weekend, it was very uncomfortable hearing everybody at the Prudential Center chant "Fire Lindy." To which I've come to the conclusion that if you're a coach that has a name that has two syllables in it, it just fits the meter of "fire blank blank" a little too easily. So if you're a coach and you don't want to get, you know, the fire chant, try to find a hyphen in your name. It makes it more difficult to chant for fans to chant to fire you. But that's what we've been talking about. Coaches already on the hot seat. You know, we expected, you know, the Philadelphia Flyers to fall out of the gate. They're 3-0. We all expected to be roasting John Tortorella by this point about how he's handling the Philadelphia Flyers. That hasn't happened, but I think in any situation, Justin, when you have as much turnover behind the bench as we just saw, I mean, there are 10 teams with new coaches behind the bench. It almost seems as if that's the way things are going now. That's the wave. And, you know, we wondered about Vancouver. You know, there's 4 coaches in the NHL that are on expiring contracts, one in Anaheim, one in Washington, one in Vancouver, one in New Jersey. And so I think a lot of us are thinking about, you know, what's happening behind the bench before we start thinking about what's happening on the ice.
The struggles against inferior teams is interesting, I think, because it feels like there's almost a defensive book out against the Maple Leafs. Like, if you are not as good as they are, you can do one thing in the defensive zone, which is to collapse, to shell up, to just do your best to close off passing lanes. Because if it isn't happening around the perimeter in transition, it seems like it's not happening for the Maple Leafs. And this is something that teams in the playoffs can look to. They know if they go the collapse route, they can not only stop you from scoring, but they can actually limit you to almost no chances overall. Like, I think the Leafs had 5 shots in that first period where they completely owned the play. Like, is that an issue that the Maple Leafs have to address, and maybe something Sheldon Keefe should be putting his energy into, is like figuring out a way to be better in those scenarios and getting inside and creating offense that way? Because this is an issue if teams have one thing they can pull on and basically zap you of your offense.
And all they need is a lead, right, Justin? Like, all you need to do is go up one puck or maybe 2 pucks, and then you just start to, what's the phrase? Sit on the game.
Park the bus.
Park the bus, sit on the game, whatever you say, and all of a sudden the Maple Leafs get frustrated. You know, I kind of think that, you know, it's an interesting conversation, Justin, and I almost think that it winks at an even bigger problem. And, you know, I was making this point the other day, actually yesterday on the radio, that if you're someone who looks at the Maple Leafs and says, you know, it's a team that just looks to play a soft game, or it's a team that just looks to play looks for a way just to play a soft game. It's a team that doesn't have a killer instinct. It's a team that doesn't do well against inferior teams when they're faced with adversity. You know, what we saw on Monday night was kind of a protein shake for those people, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. Like, that was sort of affirmation. Like, these are all the stereotypes we have about the Maple Leafs, and they've all come true. Now, I still think that it's too early to make sweeping pronouncements about this squad yet. But if, you know, if history is any indicator, and what's the old Mark Twain line? History doesn't repeat itself, but sometimes it rhymes. I think part of the frustration here, if you're a fan or if you're an observer or if you're in the organization, is, you know, Justin, to your point, you've seen this before. You know, we always, you know, not that I want to compare the Maple Leafs or anyone in the NHL to the 1980s Edmonton Oilers or the New York Islanders previous to them, some of those dynasty teams. We've even seen it with Tampa most recently, Chicago Blackhawks during a stretch as well. You know, the great teams, I find, almost get offended when an inferior team scores on them. This was true about Edmonton. Like, they see, like, didn't you get that sense? Like, when you scored on the Oilers, they were offended that you would have the nerve to score on them, and they'd come back and, like, score 3 right away. Like, how dare you do this against us? You know, we're the 80s Oilers. There's Gretzky. There's Curry. There's Messier. There's Coffey. There's Fuhr. There's Lowe. There's, like, we're too good to allow, and they had that killer instinct. And I think what this whole conversation is winking at it here is, where's that killer instinct? You know, where's that? And they had it in the third period, like when they turn on. But the first two periods, like, and I got a text from someone on another team who said, I've never seen a team that's accomplished so little skate with so much arrogance against a team that's last place in the NHL. Mm. What am I seeing here? And it's like, well, this isn't new. Like, I think anyone that's watched the Maple Leafs for a while has kind of seen this movie before. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Not that we're concerned that this won't be, you know, turned around, but the start for Austin Matthews has been less than ideal. You know, one regular time, or was it still one 5-on-5 point? Regardless, it hasn't been the Matthews that we'd expected. That's part of the reason that it seemed like a slow start. What are you seeing with him? And I mean, I believe that he's going to turn around, but what's the reasoning?
Yeah, I don't worry about him at all. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't worry about Austin Matthews. I don't worry about, you know, slow starts for superstar players. And to be honest with you, really, when it comes to a lot of teams, like the first month of the season is still sort of, okay, let's sort things out. Let's see what we have. We all know it takes, you know, the kids come into the season, like they're raring to go, right? Like they're rock and roll. Here we go. I can't believe I'm in the NHL. This is awesome. You know, more veteran teams sort of, you know, wade into the pool. They just don't cannonball off the 3-meter springboard. You know, they're taking their time getting into the pool here. I don't worry about Austin Matthews. I think by the end of the season, we're talking about, you know, is he going to score more than 60? You know, how many goals is Austin Matthews going to score? I think it's just a matter of time before he breaks out. I think that, like a lot of teams around the league, you kind of look at the first month and you say, if you can keep your head above water while you sort yourselves out, you're going to be fine. Just right now, I think everything gets magnified in Toronto because of all the playoff failures. And, you know, it's like, oh, here we go. And then all of a sudden the conversation turns to the series against Montreal where they collapsed. The series last season against the Tampa Bay Lightning where we had them on the ropes and they're saved by the bell and they got back to their corner and they came out and knocked us out. Like, I think a lot of that goes into this entire conversation, to say nothing of, like, if you're a Maple Leafs fan, how many times have you felt false started by this team? Like, that's part of the frustration too, is you've seen this team play at an elite level. You've seen this team demonstrate that they can be, you know, maybe the best team in the NHL, period. You look at, you know, Dom Lucician's model at the Athletic, and it's the number one team in the NHL. And, yeah, and the Leafs fans kind of like, ooh, okay, well, hold on a second here. Let's accomplish, you know, at a certain point, life starts and you have to actually accomplish something. But they do have that potential. And, you know, listen, you guys know sports. Teams exist in two modes. They exist in potential and they exist in actual. And just when you think you have a handle on the Maple Leafs, or just when you think that they've finally actualized as a legitimate, consistent elite team, not just in the regular season but the playoffs, you know, you get series like the Montreal series, the Tampa series, and you get clunkers like Arizona and the week before against the Montreal Canadiens. It's got to be frustrating being a Maple Leafs fan, being false started like this.
No reason to be worried about Austin Matthews, at least in the regular season. I think, you know, we're all on board. He's going to turn things around. But I feel like there should be genuine concern over Jake Muzzin, and not just because of what might be happening on the ice. Mitch Marner kind of can tend to get ahead of himself a little bit, but he had some interesting comments after the game, just worried about, you know, mentioning his wife and kids and the person being more important than the player. This is adding up, though, for Jake Muzzin, and a neck injury and something that they will proceed with caution with. It obviously means something to the Leafs' success and failure this season. But again, it's more about Jake Muzzin. Is, you know, that seems like a shared concern for you as well.
Yeah, you know what's interesting about Muzzin, Justin, is as much as John Tavares is the captain, he wears a C, etc. Don't you get the kind of feeling that it's Muzzin's room?
Oh yeah,
and they really look to him.
Yeah, in my experience, when things mattered, he was the one who poked his head out.
Yeah. Like, I really get that sense. And it's not a slight against John Tavares at all. These are two different players and two different people in different places in their career. But, you know, the Marner comments really didn't surprise me, just because of how that room feels about Jake Muzzin. But, you know, the reality of hockey is, you know, you can get really hurt playing this game. And Jake Muzzin has had, you know, now for the last few seasons, a very cozy relationship with hospital bracelets. And when you hear a player start talking about the family and his wife and kids, and this is right after, you know, he goes off with a neck injury, it's more than just, well, is it going to be 4 to 6 or 6 to 8? This is like, is he coming back? and we still don't know, and we all wish the best for Jake Muzzin. Like, what a fantastic player he's been for so many years, Stanley Cup champion and, you know, gold medalist, et cetera. I think there's legitimate concern about how bad this one is. And anytime, like, I always get kind of, I'm not a real squeamish person by design, Justin and Ailish, but anything around the neck, I don't know about you guys, but I get really uncomfortable. Neck and back.
Yeah, and repeat,
the area is like, yeah.
Repeated
like,
too, right? Boy. Like, that's when it adds up, it's really concerning.
Yeah, and you start to hear players, you know, talk about the family and, you know, there are things that are more important than hockey. You think that, okay, this is more than just, okay, he's going to need, you know, 3 to 4 weeks of rehab here and some time off. This, again, I don't know what it is. None of us knows what it is. But when you hear Marner say things like that immediately after the game, it is cause for concern.
Last one here, Jeff. You said the NHL GM meetings at Elliott's there. Right in the middle of Times Square. What's on the agenda? What are we looking for? Getting a little bit of information for moving forward.
This is a pretty, like, the first BOG is, and like this, it's not as if all the owners even go. Like, some of them don't go to this one. This is more just like Gary Bettman gives a sort of state of the union, what they're looking for coming up this season, what's the time and temp on the finances, et cetera. But, you know, Bettman really, he did say something that was pretty intriguing yesterday when he intimated that the salary cap might end up going up, like, substantially this
offseason. Did he say $4 million?
Yeah, and we're all thinking, like, we're all wondering here. And I've asked Doug Armstrong, this GM of the St. Louis Blues, on the radio show yesterday, you know, like, how do you know which numbers you're working with here? Like, when you're signing, you know, Jordan Kyrou to these big deals, he's got two free agents, Ryan O'Reilly and Vladimir Tarasenko, on the horizon. Like, how do you know what type of money and cap space you're working with? And that one, from a roster construction point of view, I mean, that's kind of a bomb that, you know, that this thing, the salary cap might go up a lot more than we thought. Like, we thought, okay, it's going to go up. It's, you know, very casual, you know, pedestrian $1 million because the NHL players, you know, have so much escrow still to pay. But if the cap goes up to like $86 million, first of all, if you're a Maple Leafs fan,
they love that.
I mean, that's the one team that kind of, like, when Dubas set out, like, no one's predicting COVID. And if there's one team that financially, from a salary cap point of view, that was really stung by COVID, it was the Maple Leafs because all of their contracts were all predicated on the salary cap continuing to rise and eventually those deals looking a lot more palatable than some people might say, even though I think that all those deals are fine. So that was an interesting one. And, you know, NHL releasing its comprehensive diversity and inclusion report as well, I thought was particularly interesting. And the timing of it was intriguing as well. Donovan Bennett sat down with Kim Davis. She's a senior executive vice president. That conversation, which I think everybody should read, is available at our website right now, sportsnet.ca. And, you know, the other issue is, and this is an intriguing one, the players want best-on-best competition, right? So plans for the World Cup are still on the horizon. They still want this. The NHL wants to do it. It's still scheduled for February of 2024, but Bill Daly and international hockey has always been his portfolio, indicating that there are some European countries that don't want any Russian players competing whatsoever. So regardless, if there's an official team from Russia, some of these countries don't want any Russian athletes in the tournament. That is another huge wrinkle here to sort out. So this one, to be honest with you, this one was a little more newsworthy than other, you know, early BOGs where it's just, yeah, nothing to report. Enjoy the rest of your day in New York and go watch the Guardians and the Yankees.
Appreciate you breaking it down for us this morning, Jeff. We'll catch up with you next week and hopefully with some more better news.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Fingers crossed. Justin Ailes, have a good rest of your morning.
You as well. Thanks, Jeff. Jeff Merrick, host of the Jeff Merrick Show and co-host of 32 Thoughts Podcast, and our insider brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit donvalleynorthlexus.com. I'm glad he brought up the report released by the NHL yesterday, accelerating diversity and inclusion. It's the first time that they have kind of come out with this full-on report, at least in a while, where they've done kind of like dimensions of framework that they wanted to touch on. But I went through it all. It's quite lengthy, 24 pages, but I just wanted to read a couple facts from this.
Okay.
Across the NHL, the clubs and employees identify as 83% white, 4% Asian, and 3% black. It's very significantly white,
yes,
as you can tell.
Yep.
The internship programs and fellowship programs, so trying to get new people into hockey, and hockey is for everyone, as they say, 65% white, 13% black, and 11% Asian. So clearly a little bit of a step in the right direction, of a little bit more.
And ultimately, parity. That's where things are going to change.
Yes, and that's that next generation that we talk about changing hockey for.
Mm-hmm.
That's step one. Then there's gender identity, and I thought this one was interesting. So across the NHL and its clubs, 61% male and 36% female. And then there's a small percentage of people that don't prefer to answer that question. So closer than I had actually thought, and I think they've made a conscious attempt in the last couple of years to hire a lot more female in like significant roles, like not
certainly,
you know, roles of importance, forward-facing roles, roles that help develop players, that help make decisions. So that one was certainly an intriguing positive that I believe. And then finally, sexual orientation, 93% straight and 1% bisexual and 1% gay. And so if you look at that, I think when we talk about a lot of these issues happening in sport in terms of some of these very serious conversations,
yep,
hockey is for everyone means more than just like your how you identify racially, sexually, but your interests as well. And I think that that was a very stunning number. But all of this is important because I think that by putting this out now, everybody knows where you stand. What's growth over 1 year? You want to see these numbers start to normalize a little bit more of this diversity and this inclusion that they are championing. They said they're going to relaunch some of the Hockey is for Everybody programs. So I think they came out with this idea and not a lot of action was taken. And now they have made a statement to actually relaunch most of these programs, these organizations, these teams are going to reevaluate what they were actually doing and not just saying, oh, hockey is for everyone, but and having, you know, rainbow tape. Like that was a lot of what happened, and have one night a year where they say everyone's included and then never talk about it again. So it looks like they've really tried to hone in on what are we actually doing? Where's the progress we're making? So them announcing those things, holding themselves accountable, moving forward, I thought was a great stepping stone. But you see the numbers and they're quite staggering of what hockey looks like.
Yeah, and what hockey looks like now. But I think the most important number or bit of information you delivered there, like there is a change in what the demographics look like. And if there's going to be change, listen, if you did this 30 years ago, of course it would have been 100%. Right. And that would have been reflected in who's working in the NHL right now, who's working in hockey right now. Of course, you can't really avoid that, mm-hmm, if it was exclusively white, straight men 30 years ago. But if the grassroots level right now has more diversity, then that's going to be reflected in what the league looks like moving forward. So the where the biggest change is at the grassroots level. And I think there's been some positive change in the last couple of years, but you can't just like, you know, can't snap your fingers and have it to be perfect. It has to, mm-hmm, actually happen organically. And for that to happen, it's got to happen at the grassroots level. So that's an encouraging thing.
And finally, they said that the major percentage of individuals working in the NHL are between that 25 and 32 range, which is bringing youth in, bringing in people that are identify as completely different than what you've done in the past. So that's really important. Younger people, different perspectives, different backgrounds, bringing different ideas to the table. So a little bit of positivity with that document. You can go read it. It's on NHL.com and take a look through the amount of work they put into it and you know, hold them accountable next year when they release this. That was something kind of to chew on, but here's our actual something to chew on, brought to you by Great Canadian Meats. Yum, yum, yum. This is going to make you real happy, Justin Cuthbert.
Are you going to mention Precious Achiuwa's stat line?
I'm not yet, but you were fired up.
That's tomorrow.
You were fired up about the lack of kits for Canada soccer,
yes,
approaching.
Disrespect.
Yeah, you were rattled. You wanted to spend your first paycheck here at Sportsnet 590 The Fan on a brand new kit. Well, Adidas is stepping in. You are struggling to find any Nike soccer kits. Well, rival Adidas is putting together some work, a World Cup focused product line with Canada's top men's players. and they're not the official kit supplier, mm-hmm. as we all know. But Adidas finding an opportunity. They heard you, Justin. Yes. The Adidas marketing team must listen to the Fan Morning Show. They said, you know what? You're right. We need to get into this empty space and find a way to capitalize. And they're doing so. And they're not bad. Like,
they're pretty good.
They're pretty good.
The problem is they have to be retro stuff, unfortunately.
Yes, they can't
because they don't have rights, they have to dip into what was. So mm-hmm. they got retro gear. I think it harkens back to 1986, all that stuff.
Wore then. Vintage is in,
which
you know
is
me.
Great. Yeah, I mean, you might not have room in your vintage closet, but you figure out a way.
I'll find a way.
But yeah, that's cool. Again, it's not a kit. It's not what they're going to be wearing on the world stage. Instead, they're going to be just running back their old unis. But okay, we got some retro sweaters from Adidas. That's great. At least someone cares.
World Cup just a month away. So get your orders
sneaking
in.
Up on us, isn't
sneaking
it?
Sneaking in. You better be wearing one of those hoodies on November 20th or whatever day they start, okay?
I'll look into it.
All right. That was something to chew on. By the way, we'll have Bobby Webster on at 8 a.m. We're going to do our wake and rake, of course, at 8:30, set up Raptors home opener. We got Yankees, Astros, Phillies, Padres, a lot of NHL and a lot of NBA. So send in your wake and rake submissions at 590-590.
And don't be deterred. One of these days, I will get a pick correct.
I did get a pick correctly yesterday, so we're on the right track.
One for four yesterday on our plus 1,700 parlay.
That was still just too many cooks in the kitchen, as they say. Yeah. We're back to the three-leg parlay. Send it in 590, 590. We're going to take a break, and we're going to do, after the break, a little bit of a Raptors rundown in terms of unders, overs, and predictions. That's next on the Fan Morning Show with Justin and Naylor, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Toronto Raptors season begins tonight.
Bing bonga! I'm going to miss him.
Bing bong!
There's your first bing bong. We're talking yesterday about the bing bongs. Are the bing bongs...
We only had one text in about that. It was a no. So does that mean we go with that person?
I mean, the text line is usually right. Cleveland Cavaliers in town. A great opening night matchup. I think two teams sort of in that, you know, that next best range in terms of mm-hmm. the elites in the Eastern Conference going head-to-head. Of course, Evan Mobley and Scottie Barnes head-to-head. Donovan Mitchell debuting with the Cleveland Cavaliers. A big, big game and an exciting night, of course, for the Raptors in the city of Toronto. And to continue teeing it up, I mean, we're going to devote this block to it. We're going to do some Raptors overs, unders. We're going to do, you know, what we think we'll see this season based on some of the numbers that have been floated out by our producer, Daniele, who's going to jump on and be involved in this conversation as well.
It's the Dan Morning Show.
I love it.
Wow.
That just come off the top of your head?
I love that.
That's perfect. The Dan Morning Show.
No, it did not land.
Let me tell you, it was good.
We liked it in here.
On this side, it didn't land.
Oh, sorry, guys.
The text line knows all, so we'll put it up to the text line.
I agree.
The Dan Morning Show. Go ahead, take it.
I agree. Let's throw it to the text line and get their feedback and input on it. One thing. Just wonderful opening night matchup. No question about it. Two really interesting, good teams. Teams on the rise. And Cleveland's a very, very interesting first opponent for the Raptors, so it should be a lot of fun. I've compiled some over-unders, and we've even got a case study involved in here, so it should be a little bit of fun.
Mm.
Just to sort of tee up in spirit, of course, of the season going tipping off tonight, put some over-unders together. We talked with Blake Murphy and Will Liu yesterday, and we actually went in terms of the betting route for over-under total and wins. I decided to just kind of put my own stamp on what the number I think should be. And I know we've kind of touched on it sort of inadvertently here, but the number I have is 49.5. Is this a 50-win team or not? Because that would constitute improvement.
I'm going to go with over because I think that that should be their expectation as well. I think that they have hit their over in, what, 8 of the last 10 of the last 11 seasons. And this is a bit higher than what their official over is set at. But I expect this team to exceed expectations. But I will say that this division or the East is a lot tighter. So the wins aren't going to come as easy, but I really do think the Raptors can be a team that hits the over in their win. I think they can hit 50 wins. I hope they do, and I expect them to have that as a goal this season.
I will take the under just slightly.
Pathetic.
I mean, the actual over-under started or opened at 44.5. It's now 46. I'm all over 46.
44 is a joke.
I know. Where was I? I should have been all over that. But anyway, it's at 46. Danielle Azier is at 49. I mean, it feels like it's going to fall between 46 and 49. I don't know if this is quite a 50-win team. And for that reason, I think it'll just nestle in right under that number, but over the numbers, so that the Raptors continue to cash over bets for their fan base. That'll be 11 out of 12 or 12 out of 13. Whatever it is, they are criminally underrated in mm-hmm. the Vegas market. But in this market, I will take the slight under.
Nice. They won 48 a year ago, so that's where, in terms of actually seeing the marginal improvement, it's I think
they can't win two more games, Justin.
The Eastern Conference is a little bit better.
They are, and that's why it makes this interesting. And where mm-hmm. would you slot in the East? Because they were the sixth seed last year. So what does that mean, right? What does that mean? Or excuse me, the five, I think mm-hmm. it was.
Yeah.
So what does that mean in the grand scheme of things? That's why I think it's actually an interesting question. Okay, next up, Fred VanVleet. We've been talking about the minutes. Nick Nurse has said that he wants the
minutes. I'm ready for this one.
I think we know side we're going
to
be on for this
He wants the minutes to go down. I'll provide some context mm-hmm. afterwards, but the number is 36.5.
Okay. I hate to say it, but he's going to hit the over. I don't believe Nick Nurse is going to play Fred as little as he has kind of predicted. The East is getting better, as I said, which is going to be a higher volume of close competitive games. Fred VanVleet's the guy that's going to be on the court in close competitive games. They didn't do anything to address this position. Unless they trade for a 1A, 1B point guard, I don't know what's going to happen unless Malachi Flynn has taken that G League or Summer Ignite, whatever that league is called, who when one time he got 60 points this summer, and that actually translates. He's going to hit the over. I'm sorry. I hope it isn't the case, because I want to see him rested and have the longevity that we need for Fred VanVleet, but just think about what I just laid out.
It's the under. I mean, this team is too smart in everything that they do to continue to make this mistake, which is to continue to run Fred into the wall. You say the East is better. It is. So there's going to be tougher games, but there's also going to be easier games. The Victor Wembanyama.
I love that guy.
I'll get that name right soon.
Wembanyama.
I still can't get it.
Oh, there's an N in there.
The number one overall draft pick, pending?
Just call him Wemby.
There's going to be a big race for him. People are going to be interested in his services. Too many teams. This is a very tankable year in the NBA. So that means there are going to be games that are blowouts.
That's why they're going to win more than 50, bud.
Okay, it's good and bad. But this is an average. So there are games where you're going to have to use Fred a lot. There are games where you can load manage Fred. And for that reason, I think you'll find a happy medium, and it will be under the 36.5 number. The 38 minutes per game last year for Fred was way too many. They got to cut that by a couple minutes. So for that reason, the under 36.5, and I will work on that name.
I love that you guys are sitting on opposite sides of the fence on that one.
It's tension in here.
VanVleet and Siakam, they averaged the same amount of minutes last year. It was 37.9, so just shy of the 38 mark that Justin referenced. That led the NBA. They were both tied in that category, so that's an interesting stat and something to keep an eye on. Okay, let's get into a Pascal Siakam little case study here, all right? We heard about it at the start of training camp. He comes out, he talks about, I want to be a top five player in this league, right? He's an all-NBA third-team player last year. I'm going to go through each of the just accounting stats. I'm going to give you numbers, and then we'll take it from there. So let's start with points per game for Pascal. 26.5, over-under for Siakam.
Immediately the under. It was 22 last year.
Yeah.
I just don't see a way. There's too much scoring to go around. They have a lot of offense on this team. Scotty, OG's going to get more. Scotty's going to want the ball. I really don't see anyone averaging over like 25. I think it's going to be a little bit more of a share here. I thought 26.5. I mean, that'd be beautiful, but I don't know. That seems really heavy on Pascal. I will say that I'm very much encouraged that he's going to want that role, but I just think it's going to be a bigger share offensively this year.
Yeah, it's under for that reason. I think you're going to be, it says something about your team if you're relying too much on mm-hmm. him for that, because I don't think he's that player where he's going to be the focus of the offense at all times. I think the Raptors are more well-rounded, and for that reason, I think that one certainly is the under for me.
And again, this is all for the purposes of what we're going to get to in the end. So mm-hmm. this is all for the conclusion. Rebounds, 8.5 a game, over under.
I'm going with the over. I think that they will rely on him a lot to rebound if Scotty takes some point guard minutes as well, which is a little question mark. I don't know. And I don't know my faith level in Ken Birch. So a little bit over the, that was a tight one though, because I think that was his exact or average last year. So I don't have a huge lean, but I'm just going to go with the over a little bit on this one.
Yeah, this is the only one that's debatable for me. Mm-hmm. I will take the under just to be different. I was going to take unders across the board. I know we're getting to where we're going. We're going to go here. I just think, you know, again, this is the one that can go over. This is the one that's most likely to go over. But again, I just feel like this is a team where you can get those counting contributions across the board. And again, it was more about, I can't think he's going under in all of these stats. So I'll let you wrap up here, Daniele.
Yep. And then the assist was 5.5. He averaged 5.3 last year. So 5.5 over under.
I'm going to go actually over with this one. As I said, there's more points to go around. So more opportunities to dish the ball to still contribute, which he's going to. And I think he's taken a step in being a leader on this team and wanting to contribute. And that doesn't always have to be getting the basket. So, and for it to be that close, 5.3 to 5.5, I think it's just a tiny edge over for me.
Yeah, it's under again for me. I mean, because if you look at this, the stat line that's been presented, you're needing 27, 9, and 6 to go over here from, I know they're, you know, decimal points, but that in... when you look at it, 27, 9, and 6 is MVP level. It's close to. It's not quite the point totals you get from Jokic or Embiid at the very high end. But if you have 27, 9, and 6, I mean, we're talking about top 5 fringe player in the NBA, and I just don't think Pascal's ceiling is that.
And that's the whole premise behind mm-hmm. it is the fact that he has set this sort of goal and has put it out there publicly, right? That would put you need to be essentially an all-NBA first-team player in order to achieve that goal, in theory of being considered a top-5 player and producing at that level. So context purposes, Jason Tatum was an all-NBA first-team player
I had him written down. I was like, this is a Jason Tatum line, and I don't think he's Jason Tatum.
He averaged 26.9 points a game. Rebounding, Giannis was the other first-team all-NBA forward last year. He averaged 11.6 boards
crazy.
A game. Okay, assist totals. Giannis was very comparable, in fact. Mm-hmm. Siakam had a great year. Career high, 5.3. Giannis averaged 5.8. So it comes down to it's Tatum and Giannis that are the incumbents in that category. On that first team roster, is he good enough to overcome and overtake either of those guys? My opinion, no. Is he very good? Is he a great mm-hmm. player? Of course, he's a very good player. All-star level caliber player. But Kevin Durant sat in the second team, and he averaged 37.5 and 6.5. And he was on the all-NBA second team, mm-hmm. KD. So I think it's a little bit of a lofty expectation. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what I was really trying to get at.
And unlike KD, he's not on an island, right? Like, to put up no numbers like that, sometimes you need to be basically doing it all yourself. You're the only guy. And the Raptors are just not designed to operate.
It's a testament to them as a team.
Yeah,
but yeah,
they don't operate that way.
I don't see that being the way that Pascal is utilized this year.
Yeah, nice. I agree. Now, cool. Next, total team triple doubles, 3.5 line for the season. Okay.
I think Scotty could get that himself. But if Scotty got 2 and Pascal got 2, there's your over. I really have high expectations for them to have blowout games, maybe like averaging a little bit less. Justin, you said there's going to be games where they're tanking for Wemby. So you don't think that Scotty can go off or Pascal can go off? We've seen them be able to control and lead in single game sample sizes specifically. So, and I want to see it. Like, let's get 4 triple doubles. Like, come on.
Yeah, last season, Siakam had 2. Fred had 1. Scotty sniffed
around
a few times, was close on a couple occasions. So I'll say Scotty gets 2. Siakam and Fred can combine for 2.
Yeah.
And the Raptors hit the over.
Love that.
Yeah, I love it too. I agree. I think that's fantastic. Great analysis.
Woo!
All right, speaking...
It's a Dan Morning Show.
Yeah, speaking of the win total, mm-hmm. okay? And we talked about how the East is better.
I like this one.
The wins, Raptors win total against teams at 500 or above, okay? So these are the upper echelon teams, the good teams that they're going to face. 28.5 wins over under for the teams that they're going to play that are at 500 or better.
Can you, this one's tough. What's the reference point? I didn't do the research. Okay, so, sorry, Daniel.
No. So let's use the reference point being they had a 50, they were 560 their win percentage was last year in that category. Okay. That was the sixth best in the NBA.
Yeah.
Okay. So that would be the reference point on that.
I think over, because I don't think this is a team like the Leafs where they play down to their competition, unless it's a specific team, which I think we'll get into. I really think that they have the leadership and the drive, and they want to be a team that is like the plucky underdog-esque. And I think they really thrive in that role. Like, their expectations are not to win the NBA championship this year, but they want to be competitive and they want to make strides. So that means showing up against teams that are good. And they've notoriously been really hard to play against, especially at home. GMs in that pre-GM survey said that playing in Toronto is the hardest place to play against. So their fan base is the best and it's a tough road game. So think about if you are able to capitalize on big games at home, that's what gets you over the edge. And so I think the Raptors can do that this year.
I will take the under. Merely a guess, though. It seems like, you know,
it's a tough one.
The same version or the same reason, as I stated earlier, with the tankability of the season, the Wemby race, they're going to be haves and have nots. And I think the haves in the Eastern Conference are going to be very, very difficult to beat with regularity. But I think they can beat up on teams that are lesser than they are. The Raptors are kind of on an island. And like, there are teams in the middle class, of course, but there are a lot of elite teams. There are a lot of really bad teams. And, you know, if you're the mark of a team like the Raptors, which prides itself on, you know, reliably and consistency and all those things, you should beat up on the teams that are not expected to win games. And 560 against teams that are 500 better, that's a pretty high mark and something that's probably going to be difficult to replicate.
Yeah, the win percentage was actually surprisingly pretty close between, you know, teams against above 500, teams under 500. They had 28 wins in total last year against those teams that were above 500. And I think it will be just a bit challenging given where the East is to potentially get that number again. Okay, let's do one more fun one, I think. Malachi Flynn. I feel bad for this guy. I genuinely feel bad for Malachi Flynn. But last year, he appeared in 44 games, had 189 points in total. I set the line 190.5. Is he going to score more than 190 points this season over the balance of the 82 games?
Malachi Flynn is my potential shoe-in for unsung hero. Let me tell you that.
Wow.
If he can play 15 minutes a game, that's the only way that Fred's minutes are going to go down and Justin's all over.
No, we got Flynn. We got Banton minutes. We got Scotty.
Well, it's a big, significant role that Malachi Flynn can play. If he can show up, he can be help, he can be somebody that gets some minutes. The other part of this is I feel bad for Malachi Flynn too, but I also need him to deliver this year. He needs to earn that spot, earn Nick Nurse's trust. His dad was all over Facebook last year, ripping the conversation about Nick Nurse. I want him to come in with a prove it mentality that there's no more question marks about what Malachi Flynn is. Come in and be like, I'm going to make an impact on this team. I'm going to produce more. I'm going to help this team by taking away minutes from players that need to rest more. Malachi Flynn over. I really hope he can be an unexpected, unsung hero of this team.
Yeah, I'm smashing the over as well. I mean, it's such a ridiculously...
Wow, we agree, finally.
It's such a ridiculously low bar. He just basically has to be used, I think, to get to this.
Put him in.
And for the same reasons that I've outlined about Fred's rest and bad teams, I feel like there has to be some opportunity for Flynn to be involved. And when he's involved, I mean, he's an option to score. So 190 points should be pretty easy for Malachi Flynn to eclipse.
I feel the opposite way.
No. Really?
And I feel for him. And you know why? It's not that he's not talented enough to play. It's not that it's not that he can't contribute or serve as a point guard and fulfill that role as a backup point guard. I just don't think Nick Nurse likes him that much. I really don't.
He definitely doesn't.
I'm going to say it. I we'll watch that game, the game tonight. Maybe he gets a sniff. I would not be shocked if he doesn't play.
I wouldn't be either, but I think as the season goes on, the opportunity has to be
earn
there.
It.
He made five,
even if it's just by default.
He made five starts last year in 44 games. He had the opportunity to start five games, whether that was mostly due to injury or there was the COVID situation in December.
Well, the fact that he only played 44 games is a big issue
as well.
But
the 44 games is the fact that he was still on the roster the whole year. He just didn't play.
Crazy.
Right? So that's telling you something, the fact that he didn't play. Delano, just old Rexdale pronunciation.
Oh, good.
Delano, he played, I think it was six. I wrote it down. I think it was 64 games last year that he appeared in. So, nonetheless, let's do just a couple predictions. I mean, Ailish gave us a nice little segue, but let's start with unsung heroes then. Mm-hmm. Who would be your unsung hero for the Raptors this season?
I just did mine, so go ahead, Justin.
I feel like if you play on the Raptors, you can't really be an unsung hero because like everyone gets a lot of attention. Everyone gets their flowers if they're deserved. But I'll say probably Fred, because I think we're gravitating to the new wave of Raptors here. All these shiny new toys. This guy still is the engine and the motor of this team. And for that reason, I think he's not always an unsung hero, but he might be this year where we're just like, okay, it's all about the other guys, but Fred still makes this thing work.
I want to give some flowers to Juancho.
Nice.
Hernan Gomez.
Movie star.
A.K.A. Bo Cruz. Yeah, because Nick Nurse came out yesterday and was pretty much sort of cemented that, hey, this guy's in the rotation. Don't be surprised if you see him play and see him actually have a role. And so I won't be shocked if he has a role. He can stretch the floor. He's something that gives something that some of the other bigs don't possess on this team.
That's kind of my point, though. Like, if he plays reasonably well, he will be cult status.
100%.
So it's like, can 100% be unsung?
Well, I think he is unsung because he's a guy that's coming in basically with, I mean, outside of the fact that he's a movie guy, right? He's coming off the being Bo Cruz. Like, where's the fanfare in terms
that's
of his
career? That's why I can't put Fred in that boat.
I agree. That's
he
why.
He needs to be sung.
That's what I'm saying, though. Like, all these guys get hyped.
It's basketball. It's the nature of having a roster where you only carry 14 guys, 15 guys, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And we'll do the X factor. Who's the main X factor for this team?
Precious Achiuwa.
Ring the bell. Precious
Achiuwa. Ding, ding, ding. Like Justin, take it away. I think we're both in agreement. It's Precious Achiuwa. He can really change the projection of this team. He has the ability. We're a big Precious show.
He could be a load in an, like, it was X factor. It was X factor breakout. Either way, he can be either X factor. He comes off the bench. He can do multiple things. He's that pop of energy. He's that pop of athleticism. I think in terms of like guys who can change what a game looks like, Precious covers those bases.
Yeah, you can't go wrong with Precious. Mine, I'll state the obvious, is Scotty Barnes, because it's year two. A lot of these superstars in the making take big leaps in year two. What is he? And is he going to be an all-star? Is he going to show that he can have sort of a superstar ceiling? That's the big question, because if that's the case, then this team going forward, projecting it forward with this core, could be a championship contending team.
I love it. We have a couple more we can get to after the break, because we don't want to keep our next guest waiting. We got Bobby Webster, Toronto Raptors GM, joining us. We'll set this all up. Maybe he's as big on Precious as you are. Justin, you could ask him. Ding, ding, ding. Bobby Webster after the break on the Fan Morning Show with Justin and Ailish, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.